Chapter 33. Bannister supported the leading character. Anne, with her hand privately clasped in Bob's, and looking as if she did not know it, partly watched the piece and partly the face of the impressionable John who had so soon transferred his affections elsewhere. As he had not long to wait. When a certain one of the subordinate ladies of the comedy entered on the stage, the trumpet major in his corner not only looked conscious, but started and gazed with parted lips. "This must be the one," apostrophe whispered Anne quickly. "See, he is agitated." Apostrophe, apostrophe, she turned to Bob, but at the same moment his hand convulsively closed upon hers as he too, strangely fixed his eyes upon the newly entered lady. "What is it?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, Anne looked from one to the other without regarding the stage at all. Her answer came in the voice of the actress who now spoke for the first time. The accents were those of Miss Matilda Johnson. One thought rushed into both their minds on the instant, and Bob was the first to utter it. What is she, the woman of his choice after all? Apostrophe, apostrophe, if so, it is a dreadful thing. Apostrophe, apostrophe, murmured Anne. But, as may be imagined, the unfortunate John was as much surprised by this rencounter as the other two. Until this moment he had been in utter ignorance of the theatrical company, and all that pertained to it. Moreover, much as he knew of Miss Johnson, he was not aware that as he had ever been trained in her youth as an actress, and that after lapsing into straits and difficulties for a couple of years as he had been so fortunate as to again procure an engagement here. The trumpet major, though not prominently seated, had been seen by Matilda already, who had observed still more plainly her old betrothed, and Anne in the other part of the house. John was not concerned on his own account at being face to face with her, but at the extraordinary suspicion that this conjuncture must revive in the minds of his best beloved friends. After some moments of pained reflection, he tapped his knee. "Gad, I won't explain, it shall go as it is. Apostrophe, apostrophe," he said. "Let them think her mine. Better that than the truth, after all." Apostrophe, had personal prominence in the scene been at this moment proportioned to intenseness of feeling, the whole audience, regal and otherwise, would have faded into an indistinct mist of background, leaving as the sole emergent and telling figures Bob and Anne at one point, the trumpet major on the left hand, and Matilda at the opposite corner of the stage. But fortunately the deadlock of awkward suspense into which all four had fallen was terminated by an accident. A messenger entered the king's box with dispatches. There was an instant pause in the performance. The dispatch box being opened, the king read for a few moments with great interest, the eyes of the whole house, including those of Anne Garland, being anxiously fixed upon his face. For terrible events fell as unexpectedly as thunderbolts at this critical time of our history. The king at length beckoned to Lord, who was immediately behind him, the play was again stopped, and the contents of the dispatch were publicly communicated to the audience. Sir Robert Calder, cruising off Finister, had come in sight of Villeneuve, and made the signal for action, which, though checked by the weather, had resulted in the capture of two Spanish line of battleships, and the retreat of Villeneuve into Ferrol. The news was received with truly national feeling, if noise might be taken as an index of patriotism. Rule Britannia was called for and sung by the whole house. But the importance of the event was far from being recognized at this time, and Bob Loveday, as he sat there and heard it, had very little conception how it would bear upon his destiny. This parenthetic excitement diverted for a few minutes the eyes of Bob and Anne from the trumpet major, and when the play proceeded, and they looked back to his corner, he was gone. "He's just slipped round to talk to her behind the scenes," apostrophe said Bob knowingly. "Shall we go to and tease him for a sly dog?" Apostrophe, "No, I would rather not." Apostrophe, apostrophe, "Shall we go home then?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, "Not unless her presence is too much for you." Oh, not at all. We'll stay here. Ah, there she is again. They sat on and listened to Matilda's speeches, which she delivered with such delightful coolness that they soon began to considerably interest one of the party. Well, what a nerve the young woman has. He said at last in tones of admiration, and gazing at Miss Johnson with all his might. After all, Jack's taste is not so bad. She's really deuced clever. Bob, I'll go home, if you wish to, said Anne quickly. Oh no, let us see how she fleets herself off that bit of a scrape she's playing at now. Well, what a hand she is at it, to be sure. Anne said no more, but waited on, supremely uncomfortable, and almost tearful. She began to feel that she did not like life particularly well. It was too complicated. She saw nothing of the scene, and only longed to get away, and to get Bob away with her. At last the curtain fell on the final act, and then began the farce of No Song, No Supper. Matilda did not appear in this piece, and Anne again inquired if they should go home. This time Bob agreed, and taking her under his care with redoubled affection, to make up for the species of coma which had seized upon his heart for a time, he quietly accompanied her out of the house. When they emerged upon the esplanade, the August moon was shining across the sea from the direction of St. Aldhelm's Head. Bob unconsciously loitered, and turned towards the pier. Reaching the end of the promenade, they surveyed the quivering waters in silence for some time, until a long dark line shot from behind the promontory of the Nothe, and swept forward into the harbor. What boat is that? Said Anne. It seems to be some frigate lying in the roads, said Bob carelessly, as he brought Anne round with a gentle pressure of his arm, and bent his steps towards the homeward end of the town. Meanwhile, Miss Johnson, having finished her duties for that evening, rapidly changed her dress, and went out likewise. The prominent position which Anne and Captain Bob had occupied side by side in the theater left her no alternative but to suppose that the situation was arranged by Bob as a species of defiance to herself, and her heart, such as it was, became proportionately embittered against him. In spite of the rise in her fortunes, Miss Johnson still remembered and always would remember her humiliating departure from Overcombe, and it had been to her even a more grievous thing that Bob had acquiesced in his brother's ruling than that John had determined it. At the time of setting out she was sustained by a firm faith that Bob would follow her and nullify his brother's scheme, but though she waited, Bob never came. She passed along by the houses facing the sea, and scanned the shore, the footway, and the open road close to her, which, illuminated by the slanting moon to a great brightness, sparkled with minute facets of crystallized salts from the water sprinkled there during the day. The promenaders at the further edge appeared in dark profiles, and beyond them was the gray sea, parted into two masses by the tapering braid of moonlight across the waves. Two forms crossed this line at a startling nearness to her. She marked them at once as Anne and Bob Loveday. They were walking slowly, and in the earnestness of their discourse, were oblivious of the presence of any human being save themselves. Matilda stood motionless till they had passed. How I love them! She said, treading the initial step of her walk onwards with a vehemence that walking did not demand. So do I especially one, said a voice at her elbow, and a man wheeled round her and looked in her face, which had been fully exposed to the moon. You, who are you? She asked. Don't you remember, ma'am? We walked some way together towards Overcombe earlier in the summer. Matilda looked more closely and perceived that the speaker was Dairyman, in plain clothes. He continued, you are one of the ladies of the theater, I know. May I ask why you said in such a queer way that you loved that couple? In a queer way? Well, as if you hated them. ... I don't mind your knowing that I have good reason to hate them. You do too, it seems? ... That man, said Festus savagely, came to me one night about that very woman, insulted me before I could put myself on my guard, and ran away before I could come up with him and avenge myself. The woman tricks me at every turn. I want to part 'em. Then why don't you? There's a splendid opportunity. Do you see that soldier walking along? He's a Marine. He looks into the gallery of the theater every night. And he's in connection with the press gang that came ashore just now from the frigate lying in Portland Roads. They are often here for men. Yes. Our boatmen dread 'em. Well, we have only to tell him that Loveday is a seaman, to be clear of him this very night. Done. Said Festus. Take my arm, and come this way. They walked across to the footway. Fine night, Sergeant. It is, sir. Looking for hands, I suppose? It is not to be known, sir. We don't begin till 10:30. It is a pity you don't begin now. I could show ye excellent game. What, that little nest of fellows at the LD rooms in Cove Row? I have just heard of 'em. No, come here. Festus, with Miss Johnson on his arm, led the sergeant quickly along the parade, and by the time they reached the narrows the lovers, who walked but slowly, were visible in front of them. There's your man, he said. That buck in pantaloons and half boots a looking like a squire? 12 months ago he was made of the brig Pewit, but his father has made money and keeps him at home. Faith, now you tell of it, there's a hint of sea legs about him. What's the young beau's name? Don't tell. Whispered Matilda, impulsively clutching Festus's arm. But Festus had already said, Robert Loveday, son of the miller at Overcombe. You may find several likely fellows in that neighborhood. The Marine said that he would bear it in mind, and they left him. I wish you had not told, said Matilda tearfully. She's the worst. Dash my eyes now, listen to that. Why, you chicken-hearted old stager, you was as well agreed as one. Come now, hasn't he used you badly? Matilda's acrimony returned. I was down on my luck, or he wouldn't have had the chance. She said. Well then, let things be. XXXI. Midnight visitors, Miss Garland and Loveday walked leisurely to the inn, and called for horse and gig. While the hostler was bringing it round, the landlord, who knew Bob and his family well, spoke to him quietly in the passage. Is this then, because you want to throw dust in the eyes of the Black Diamond chaps? With an admiring glance at Bob's costume, the Black Diamond? Said Bob, and Anne turned pale. She hove in sight just after dark, and at 9 o'clock a boat having more than a dozen Marines on board, with cloaks on, rowed into harbor. Bob reflected. Then there'll be a press tonight, depend upon it, he said. They won't know you, will they, Bob? Said Anne anxiously. They certainly won't know him for a seaman now, remarked the landlord, laughing, and again surveying Bob up and down. But if I was you too, I should drive home along straight and quiet, and be very busy in the mill all tomorrow, Mr. Loveday. They drove away, and when they had got onward out of the town, Anne strained her eyes wistfully towards Portland. Its dark contour, lying like a whale on the sea, was just perceptible in the gloom as the background, to half a dozen ships' lights near at hand. They can't make you go, now you are a gentleman tradesman, K. can they? Apostrophe apostrophe she asked. If they want me, they can have me, dearest. I have often said I ought to volunteer. Apostrophe apostrophe and not care about me at all? Apostrophe apostrophe it is just that keeps me at home. I won't leave you, if I can help it. Apostrophe apostrophe it cannot make such a vast difference to the country, whether one man goes or stays. But if you want to go you had better, and not mind us at all. Apostrophe apostrophe Bob put a period to her speech by a mark of affection to which history affords many parallels in every age. She said no more about the Black Diamond, but whenever they ascended a hill she turned her head to look at the lights in Portland Roads and the gray expanse of intervening sea. Though Captain Bob had stated that he did not wish to volunteer and would not leave her if he could help it, the remark required some qualification. That Anne was charming and loving enough to chain him anywhere was true, but he had begun to find the mill work. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.